Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hello everybody, welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host Scott Tilford, joined by Josh Brown.
Hello.
And Ewan Patterson.
Hello.
Guys, we can finally swap the word leak for officially confirmed.
Finally!
I hate leaks!
I don't, I love leaks.
I love leaks.
I love leaks, I love the vegetable and I love the content.
Plugging them.
Both on a Sunday or on an afternoon, because there's been a nice big old interview with Mark Cerny, Sony's Mark Cerny, who tends to be the sort of, I never get his actual title right, it's like lead engineer coding man.
Architect man.
Architectural.
The architect. Maestro, oh, the genius.
He's from the Matrix.
Yeah.
The architect.
I think so.
Yeah.
Vis-a-vis confirmed things from this man. So he's been talking to Wired, and Sony then went on Twitter and shared things out and said, look, the PS5 is coming, holiday 2020. Also, here's a big old list of stuff. So we're just going to run things down. We've got a whole bunch of different talking points and just, you know, we've got a much better picture of what the PS5 is.
Because I know nothing. You drafted me in like I was a fresh-faced 18-year-old who wanted to see the world and join the Marines.
I like this,
you joined me into the content.
This is a good will to have.
Because Ewan went off to lunch and then this all broke and I saw you come back with the sort of orange juice in hand and I thought, you've missed about a year's worth of content here somehow.
I think me and you aged about 50 years trying to turn it around in about 10 minutes. But the easiest thing is that a lot of this information is that you can go over if you're on YouTube to the What Culture Gaming channel, where you can watch me and Josh just freak out about it and react mostly in real time, really.
Kind of.
To this sort of information. But I've bolstered that with some additional bits and bobs. But anyway, yes, the official name for it is the PlayStation 5, somewhat obviously, but it's worth saying. The disc size will be 100 gigs. It's going to be optical discs. And it will also be a 4K Blu-ray player as a console. Mm. So I guess we might as well talk about that, because general sort of file sizes are something that has been talked about this generation, as at least on, for me, it's like getting out of control.
Yeah.
And Red Dead 2 is sort of like a notable thing. It's being 90-odd gig. If we all start getting bigger, what the hell's going
to
happen?
I was amazed yesterday when I only had to delete one thing to download Grid.
Good Lord.
It was Grid Lord.
Good Lord.
Like, there's so much, like, it's such a frustrating thing, and I can't be asked getting a new hard drive. I can't be asked to bring the PlayStation 4 Pro. This has come at the exact right time for me.
Also, let me tell you, on the other side of that fence, me and Josh have both got PS4 Pros, and we still delete stuff all the time.
Well, that's it. You know, it was perfect for the first couple of months until I obviously filled it up and then I had to start deleting things again. It's a nightmare. It sounds like, oh Josh, it's a little bit of a 1% problem, is it?
And first world problem?
Yes, maybe it is a bit,
it's like you got a big
title to complain about it. Mm-hmm. But it's like you got a big bin, Ewan.
Yeah.
And you load it up with stuff and you can't tip it out.
And
I don't
you
know
get a bigger bin.
That went
and then you
there.
Just keep going.
You just keep going. Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Like that,
what about
better than a bin?
What about a bin?
Yeah,
that scanned everything you put in it and knew when to delete it.
I'll be a bit scared of that.
That's not what the PS5 is.
The bins are taking over.
Let me tell you something else. Mr. Mark Cerny talked about this, though, the idea of managing data, and he said that he wants the PS5 to sort of, when you install a game on it, it would know essentially what the different components of that game were in terms of single player, multiplayer. And he said that they want to allow finer grained access to data. And sort of the way that then got sort of postulated in the article write-up was that you'd be able to install single player portions instead of a multiplayer. Different parts of a game, maybe you leave the single player, maybe you delete the single player after you complete it, leaving the multiplayer behind if that's the thing that you're going to keep doing. More intelligent, like, managings of data, which I
think that's
like
a good way to kind of optimize it, because if you put increasingly large hard drives into, obviously the consoles, that boosts up the price. So if you can sort of deliver a kind of storage system that we're used to, around about the similar size, whilst optimizing how things are actually stored in it. To me, that's quite a good solution. It also works for when you complete a game like Grand Theft Auto 5 and you don't want to delete the online aspect, but you've got the single player taking up a lot of space and you might be able to get another game on there if you delete that. It's just a cool way to kind of optimize that sort of aspect.
How many times have you had it where your mates were like, oh, mate, do you want to go on this game that we played like 6 months ago?
Oh, man.
Oh, like, yeah, mate.
That's long gone.
It's like, oh, yep. I've got to reinstall it.
Well, that was like you with Red Dead 2. I was like, I'd love to just pop on, but it's 90 gigs.
Exactly. So if you just have the one online component, that makes sense because single player is a commitment. You're going to go into single player and you're going to dabble in and out. But whereas if you're going to have multiplayer, that's just going to be on your console forever. And that's a great idea.
And the ability to just download the patches or something ahead of time or like the updates to have them already sort of on the system. So all you might need to do is sort of install the multiplayer component. That would go a long way as well because there's that element that you mentioned there, Ewan, about, you know, having to reinstall an entire game. But there's nothing worse when you get to that point, it's reinstalled, and then you've got
copying file.
You've got 10 gigabytes of patches and updates to go through as well. It's not intuitive
that,
or
that was frustrating with Rainbow Six Siege. They had to release a patch for their patches that commodified all their patches into one patch. Right. So you had actually like to decrease the file size because like there are some times when a game gets updated so many times that the file size is like twice what it was when it first came on, and that's frustrating.
And the way that the PS4 sorts that data is it's really weird because Sony have never really fully explained this, but you always need double the file size that you're trying to install because it needs to duplicate the file, create the updated version of the game, and then it deletes the update file. So you always actually need more than the file size that it asks you to free up, which is always confusing as hell, and always means that you're never really fully confident of why something won't install or whatever. Also, like, it was weird at the beginning of the generation, that idea that you could, you know, install so much stuff and have so many different things running off the hard drives. And I think they didn't give us a big enough hard drive initially. I think everyone has suffered that problem. And they haven't actually talked about the new hard drive sizes. But they have said that it's going to be an SSD, which is a solid state drive, which apparently means that general boot times and load times are exponentially faster. The example given from months ago and in the new report is Spider-Man, that you'd be able to load from the main menu to the game in literally like 3 or 4 seconds, which is a nice little thing.
I enjoyed seeing the costumes and the little loading screens occasionally. Just
not anymore.
Just slightly.
So it was really weird in terms of loading screens. This is a kind of a tangent, but Namco used to own the patent for the idea of a mini game being on a loading screen. That was why Ridge Racer had Space Invaders, or it was Gradius or whatever back then. And they owned that patent, so no other developers did that. That patent expired about 3 or 4 years ago, but no devs have gone back to put games in their loading screens.
I'm curious, because there was when Spider-Man was at E3, the E3 before it released, they had a demo on the show floor. I don't know if you remember it, but like they had the menu, and you press play, and then it cut from Spidey being on the side here to him jumping off the building and then swinging instantly.
Yes. Yeah,
I
think
that would be a great way to have it, if you loaded into a game, and say you're in Red Dead 2, it's got Arthur Morgan by a tree, and then if you press play, he gleans off the tree, and that's him going in. It might be a lot of pointless loading, to be fair, but if they can do it, that would be a great way of just, you know, making the transition more seamless and even a little bit more immersive.
It reminds me of like movies that sort of do animations around the Universal logo, where you sort of zoom past the text and it keeps going or whatever. Yeah. Like, it's just a different way to think about like accessing video games, which Phil Spencer's talked about this stuff on the Xbox side as well, about like, you know, like minimizing the time that we boot up and we're waiting for games to play. So I think that's going to be like a big old focus going forward. We didn't talk that much about 4K Blu-ray stuff, but where do you fall on that? Because it's going to require upgrading a TV, but maybe it's more of an incentive. I know me and Josh are already there. But
chef's
still,
kiss, Scott. I've been waiting for this. I've needed an excuse to get a 4K Blu-ray player for about a year now, and I've always been tempted to. And I'm glad I've held off because now I get to buy a console and have that.
Have you got loads of those ones where you bought a Blu-ray or a DVD and it gives you the 4K disc, but you can't use it? I've got a 4K version of Thor Ragnarok that's been sitting there for like 2 years.
No, see, because that would make me just lose my tether out. If I had that had lying around, I would have to buy a 4K Blu-ray player.
I've got like 3 or 4 4K Blu-rays ready to go.
I've got a 4K TV, but I've never really... I'm fine with Blu-rays, so like the idea that I'm now being dragged kicking and screaming in the new age
is if you want it, if
terrifying.
You want some fancy detail.
You
want
to see every blemish on Arthur Morgan? You want to see every single white head on Peter Parker? Now's the time, kids.
It's coming for you.
Interesting, though, because obviously this is a big thing for PlayStation, because no current PlayStation console has a 4K Blu-ray player built in, but that's kind of become the standard for Xbox. The original Xbox One doesn't have one, but the Xbox One S does. does, the Xbox One X does. So it kind of feels like, in this regard, Sony are playing catch-up. So I wonder if there's anything they can like throw in with that to kind of make it a selling point, or whether that's just going to be kind of something they're just catching up
on. A free copy of Venom.
I would maybe take that.
Probably. Actually, I never buy movies off the PlayStation Store, but they are there. It's just that 4K file sizes tend to be ginormous.
Yeah.
But like, assumedly in this future where everything's connected and we're okay with like closer to 100 gig file sizes, that streaming would have got to a point where it's better, or downloads, or whatever.
I think we're already seeing that now. We're seeing, obviously, 4K Blu-rays become more popular, but even on the streaming side of things, Amazon Prime are really good at getting 4K versions of movies that you can rent or stream, and Netflix obviously has a 4K kind of dedicated pricing model where you can stream that to your console, and I've been taking advantage of that now, so that would hopefully become more prevalent.
I have a 4K version, digital version of Spider-Verse, the only 4K thing that I can actually watch in 4K, because like you said, the discs don't get supported anywhere else. Another feature is ray tracing, which I don't care about, even though I've been shown it. Do you guys know what this is? It's a thing. So apparently this is just, it's weird, because even when I watched the demos of it, I think Josh knew a little bit more than me, but like
I quizzed
Rich, because he's our PC man, he knows all the tech things, and he showed me, and he said that it's basically the way that light's being rendered in video games hasn't been done as accurately as what actual light is. If you think of like actual light is photons and reflections and everything else, and for the most part, like, that hasn't been done realistically in a video game. So ray tracing tends to be actually modeling a light source and then everything that comes from that. So if you look at a game like Control, that game has like real accurate reflections because it's modeling the light in real time, so you come up with reflections and shattered glass, and it, you know, changes everything and whatever. I don't need that in most of my games, so I don't know how much I care.
Well, this is sort of, I guess, a talking point for this podcast, which is very handy, is that how much you sort of, you know, care about graphics at this point, because I still, you know, love every kind of, you know, revolution in lighting or sound or whatever, or like, you know, how many polygons you can fit onto a screen. For me, that's still exciting. I love it. I love lighting, especially the way sort of that kind of boosts the immersive nature of sort of the kind of, you know, environment or whatever. Mm-hmm. Control, even though the ray tracing isn't on consoles, looks gorgeous.
Looks amazing.
How that lighting is sort of utilized. And I think it's so dynamic and so interesting that we haven't had realistic lighting sources so far. We've had things that try to imitate it and things that do a very good job of imitating it. But now that we sort of have, you know, accurate light sources that bounce around an environment, I think that's just... For me, that's just really cool.
You have to hope it'll kick everything up a notch.
I mean, I guess it's less not a necessary generation, but the indulgent generation. And I'm kind of here for it. Like, I don't really care about 4K visuals, but I'm here for physics and making, you know, proper actual worlds feel like they're actual worlds. I like the idea of a daily night cycle that actually, you know, simulates the actual light of the moon. I always feel as though games at nighttime always get the light of the moon really wrong. Like, there's never enough light, or there's too little. So I like the idea of having that. I love the idea of going into a building and maybe a shot comes through a building, and then you've got the sky
punch the hole
crushing
through
down.
It, yeah.
Imagine a really cool like vampire game where you've got light mechanics like that, and you've got to use them that way. A new Alan Wake could use that really well as well. So I definitely think there's potential, you know, with gameplay as well, for these graphical advancements to really, you know, have a role. And it's a case of like, well, maybe I don't care about seeing every single minute detail, but I do like the idea of we getting more physics based gameplay that is, you know, more not realistic, but, you know, but more genuine.
I think my only thing is I'm there for it, in as much as it's like a new technology thing and I'm curious what they do with it. I have a sort of inbuilt pushback against some focus on long development cycles, putting so much time into something that I would rather see put into game mechanics or
level. Do you want to see the horse ball shrink?
I want to see the horse ball shrink.
I don't need the horse ball shrink being the overall mandate for a whole generation. It's kind of a thing.
We could kind of do a whole pod on it, but sort of if you look at Toy Story 4 now, which is set the bar for sort of lighting and animation. Like there's a great video by the Nerdwriter, which recently went up about how they use lighting in that sort of, you know, movie, and how every single light source in there is sort of, you know, its individual bulb that creates a sort of, you know, atmosphere. And that doesn't necessarily impact how a story is told, but it impacts sort of
it's almost subtly affected in
visual storytelling. I think light is obviously a huge part of that, so that can only be beneficial. And also ray tracing, again, I'm not an expert on this, so everyone feel free to correct me in the comments. It also apparently helps with sort of 3D audio as well, like the way you can sort of bounce around the sounds of an environment to make them more realistic and immersive, which Sony seems to be wanting to double down on when it comes to sort of the audio side. I keep mentioning that Mark Cerny said in the last Wired interview that the jump in audio quality from PS3 to PS4 was kind of just standard. Not much had really changed, and there was a space for them to kind of embrace 3D binaural audio and stuff like that.
We should talk about that stuff a lot, because because yeah, that was from an earlier interview, which he didn't mention in this thing. But it is weird because like certain things, they almost seem obvious that we take them for granted. Like, okay, that's how you do light in a game. That's how you do sound in a game. But why not change from mono to stereo to something else? And like he said about like the future of audio being full 3D, full 3D binaural audio, which is, if you look at something like Hellblade, I mentioned this in the news, but like, you know, like that game, you're defending against enemies because you hear them come from specific angles behind you, which is really, really cool.
The applications and multiplayer is going to be a big thing for that as well. I think developers will have, the onus will be on the developers to make this actually happen, you know. You know, the technology will be there, it'll be up to them to make it happen. And my mind goes to Siege again. It's like there'll be times where, you know, that game is so three-dimensional, you'll have enemies beneath you and below you, and you can do things where you put booby traps through the floor to make sure you listen out for them. I like the idea of that happening. I'd love a proper compelling horror video game where you hear footsteps around, you can better plan your movements, because if you hear the, like, see, you look up and you hear footsteps and you see dust coming through the floorboards. There's so many different applications. It gets me really excited.
Siege is a great shot because if you were in some enclosed room and you're waiting for trying to see where people are outside, you fire a few bullets through some and make some holes and some light sources, see a shadow going past.
There are still so many occasions in this current gen where you'll walk into one room, fire a gun, and your teammate won't hear it, and then suddenly as soon as you step just a little bit, that there's no sense of arc to the sound sometimes. As well, sound doesn't travel very realistically a lot of the time in video games, and I like the idea, even in Red Dead at the moment, which I'm playing through, if you shoot indoors, there isn't specific indoor sound. It never changes based on the bullet going through a bigger room or a smaller room. It's the same static noise. I like the idea of, you know, going in, maybe developers go and pay for a trip to people, like they do the Assassin's Creed, send them to Venice or something, shoot down a big Vatican hallway and see what, like, the sound travels or whatever, like that.
I think there's a lot of scope to, like I said, like to improve on things like that in ways that we don't even think we need until you see the demo for it. If that was the thing that you were going to
say. For me, it was sort of VR games, because that uses like kind of 3D audio, and it works so well, especially sort of in the high quality kind of Sony first party games. The way they use kind of audio to increase the immersion and the storytelling as well. The fact that you have to sort of look at someone to get to hear them better and stuff like that. So ears are sort of
weirdly like roots you, like in Blood and Truth, like the PSVR Worlds demo, and you're just talking to people. It weirdly roots you into what could be a basic cutscene because you literally have to pay attention to who's talking.
It just makes the world more 3D in a really strange way, but like you said, even like the way sound travels at the moment is it's not flat, but it's not dynamic, I don't think, or at least as dynamic as it could be when you have those kind of high-end setups or you have those really good headphones and stuff like that. And if that becomes standard, that's really exciting, and it gives the developers more tools to utilize and make.
It's interesting in terms of cross-platform stuff too, because it would mean that the PS5 has access to this like greater degree of immersion that assumedly the Xbox won't have. And we don't know anything about the Xbox Scarlet that much to this degree yet. But if the whole industry is moving into 3D audio and, you know, like these sort of like ideas, then assumedly the Xbox is doing the same thing. Otherwise, you would have like the way more immersive version on PS5. Mm-hmm. It just seems like it would have to be an industry step up as well, like over time anyway. Then the massive thing to break down and just talk about is the new controller. Now, this doesn't have a name yet. Assumedly DualShock 5. Almost definitely, absolutely, but you never know.
The Quad Shock.
The Dual Revolution. So this thing is apparently heavier and has a larger battery than the DualShock 4. But the biggest thing is two big things. One is that it has adaptive triggers, which is that it'll push back. Say you're trying to aim like a bow and arrow, when you pull back on the bow and arrow, the trigger will gradually provide sort of like feedback to that. So you have to really sort of pull back to get the full strength of it. I love the idea of that. Even though it reminds me of what the Xbox tried to do at the start of this generation, and they didn't really follow through on it that much.
Yeah, I mean, I think the most rudimentary thing we've seen where trigger pressure has kind of worked in video game combat would be like in old FPSs. You know, in real life, with different firearms, they have different pressures on the trigger. So say if you're shooting an assault rifle, you push the trigger in once, that doesn't do anything. Then you have the second pressure, and that's when the fire releases. With a sniper rifle, it doesn't have either pressures, so you just tap it once and it'll go straight away. And I've already seen that in a bunch of FPS games. So I'm curious to see how this factors into stuff like, you know, like you say, bows and arrows, but like, you know, swords and heavier weaponry.
The
really
second example he gives is guns, and just says that, the idea of like shooting a machine gun would feel completely different to firing a shotgun. Yeah. So like, I guess I was saying to Josh on the other video, but like if you played Call of Duty, your loadout would extend to what you're personally comfortable with playing that game, whether you want to, like, you know, you have a certain affinity for like machine guns or whatever.
Just imagine just going around with a big
shaking around everywhere. Like a minigun would just feel really good.
It could add like a sort of new application to FPSs. Say for instance, you know, it's based on the accuracy of your weapon is based on how hard you pull the trigger. If you're in a sort of frantic situation where I turn a corner and I don't realize Scott's there, I might just pull down on it and then start like shooting. But it would be cool if that could translate exactly. It'd be cool if that could translate. If that panic could translate to in-game sort of. Yeah, your accuracy goes all over the place. Yeah. But if you were sort of more considered and you were more thoughtful with your button press, that might translate to more accurate shooting.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
I think there's a lot of potential.
Literally thought as well, vehicles. You think of like when a helicopter, I don't know if you've seen Black Hawk Down, when the fuel line gets cut and they start having resistance in the pedals and stuff. Yeah. Wouldn't that be interesting if you're trying to control the thing and then like you've got resistance all across the main pad? And that'd be really cool.
There's for the Xbox example, like I said, they tried to do this with Microsoft. They were like, oh, we're going to have our trigger sort of fight back and whatever, but they didn't really have that many games that did that. I don't necessarily know the motors.
I'd like to see them try.
trying to fight you to play a game, but I remember with the Forza games, if you go do a really big long drift, you'll feel it like shake. Like you'll feel like one of the sides of the pad will feel different to the other. Trying to sort of replicate like that idea that the
weight
back
of the
end,
chassis,
the car's like swinging out as you go around. And I like that stuff. I think that's like subtly effective in like simulation type games. But even in like in an RPG sense, like if you were going to be a big like dual handing RPG character, when you like slam home with a massive sword, that would feel different to a couple of daggers or whatever, like a ranged spell or something. I like the idea of all that stuff. The other big thing for the controller is that they've said there are programmable voice coil actuators in the left and right grips of the controller itself.
An actuator? What's an actuator?
So, I don't actually know what an actuator is, but I'm going to assume it's some fancy thing. But going alongside the trigger stuff, it seems that like overall, when you're sort of like playing a game, whether it's a platformer, an action adventure, whatever, gives you a different overall set of feedback. The example that was given in the write-up is that the person was walking over a whole bunch of different surfaces and said that sand felt slow and sluggish, mud felt really slow and soggy, but ice was incredibly more light and they could glide over it, but they felt all of it in the controller. What do you guys think of that stuff?
Good. Give me more of that. Anything that sort of can tell me more about how this character exists inside an environment is something I'm absolutely here for. I love the sort of animation priority of Rockstar games, and especially a shooter like Max Payne 3, which isn't the most intuitive. It doesn't feel like great to play, but it also does because it's so sort of indebted to rooting you in that environment and making you feel the weight of Max Payne as he dives across the floor and he tries to shoot people. And it works to sort of give it a kind of, heft that a lot of games don't have, and anything that sort of I don't know, puts that over to the environment itself is a pro for me.
But I think mapping the Max Payne 3 would be a great idea, because like when you make a jump in Max Payne 3, even without all the traditional stuff yet, when you land in Max Payne 3, he really feels like he threw his whole body in a certain direction, and you're really like forcing him to get back off the ground and keep going. But like you could double down on that stuff with like the idea that you know, even to raise your hand for the next shot requires like a little bit more on the trigger, or you miss a few shots unless you really squeeze it perfectly or whatever.
It makes sense. Like in Red Dead 2, obviously they had such a big influence on the different environments. Like excuse me, when you're in the snow in Amberino, your character really moves and you hit the crunch and you move. I would like that to be the sluggish thing. I think if Breakpoint was better and the environmental, you know, implications of, you know, stealth combat, like going through like a swamp, so you're going through a swamp to take people down, you feel like the slosh of the controller as you're walking slowly through, and then you raise your weapon, you got a little bit of weight on the I think that'd be really cool.
I guess, how do you see it like applying like overall into, like, because obviously these things, we get excited about them now and I'm very much like hyped for the whole thing, but how easy do you think it is that it slips into gimmick territory, that they don't carry it forward? I mean, on the PS4, we had the LED light bar at the top, we had the touchpad, we had the little speaker that was inside it, and very few games have done anything meaningful with either of them.
I think when it comes to kind of these features that we're talking about today, they're already implemented on a game level, and it's just transferring that visual stimulus over to a kind of physical stimulus into the controller. So I think it will be a more natural progression. When we have the DualShock 4, even though I like a lot of the features on there, the idea of kind of a touchpad or a kind of light bar, that was replacing features that we already had, kind of for a gimmick essentially, whereas this kind of just seems to be more of a natural continuation of features that are already in games, just transferring them over to a kind of physical space.
I just, because another thing as well, in terms of like just sheer accessibility to these things, like to have like the squeeze, like the controllers, like you know, triggers that are harder to push or whatever, like you'd have to have options to turn all that stuff off. So you can't make it too integral, which sort of makes me interested in just like, yeah, where does the gimmick side of it end, and where does it become a fundamental part of the game? Because I love the 3D audio in Hellblade, but I can't think of any other games that fundamentally require 3D audio or like, you know, factor it into the narrative. You have multiplayer experiences like Call of Duty and stuff, but I would like them to steer into that stuff more. But I guess I'm just curious like how much they really make a point of saying this is what the PS5 can do and every game has this and whatever. But yeah, another massive thing is the revamped UI, which didn't get that much specific detail in terms of images or anything. But the way that Mark Cerny sort of talked about the way that we interface with other players when playing a PlayStation, he wants to change all that stuff. It kind of goes hand in hand with the idea of the system booting up faster and whatever. And the person in the Wired interview compared it to like the UI as it is at the minute is like static, and you know, you don't really do much with it. But the UI for the new one will have like constant data readouts of what your friends are playing and whether you can jump in. You'll be able to see mission rewards and level rewards, and you'll be able to see like at a glance exactly what you might want to jump into. What do you think of that? Because it makes me think of the type of games, the way the games will be designed to then factor into that.
Yeah, for me, this is, I will concede that I think I'm in the minority of players when it kind of comes to these features, because I'm not a very social sort of gamer.
Peer offline, me too.
Peer offline. Yep. Play single player games. Don't talk to any of my friends or any strangers on the internet. Yep. But yeah, when it comes to sort of the PlayStation 4's UI at the moment, I like how kind of sparse it is. Right. I like how minimal it is in comparison to sort of the Xbox One's, which until recently was very, very cluttered. But I will concede that I think the industry is going down a more social route, and that embracing these kind of features might be, I don't know, perfect for a lot of people who like to play with their friends. Mm-hmm. The idea of sort of, right now, if I want to jump in a game that my friends are playing from the home screen, I have to jump in, I have to wait till it loads up, I have to see if the game is available.
Right.
But by the sounds of Mark Cerny's interview here, it sounds like all that information will be available to you on the dashboard.
I'll read you a little quick quote.
Which is cool.
He just says that, because they talk about like data readouts, constant feeds of information. And he said that multiplayer game servers will provide the console with sets of joinable activities in real time. Single player games would provide you with certain rewards and what you might receive for completing them, and all of the choices will be visible in the UI. As a player, you just jump into whatever you like.
Yeah, I mean, if it's seamless as that and it's not too garish or intrusive, then fine. Because I'm with you and I'm not with you, because like, I definitely think if I'm going into a single player mode, or I'm going into isolation, please leave me the hell alone mode. I don't want to know what everyone's getting. I don't care what trophy you just locked. I don't care what you're doing.
Someone just beat your time.
Exactly. So I don't care. Like the full on Tommy Lee Jones. I don't care. I just don't care. But if it's a case of making joining your friends more easy, for example, I mean, I've played so many goddamn games where I've tried to join a friend's session as that's going on, and then it's saying, "You're now in a queue." It's like, but the thing told me that it was available. You're in a queue now. Yep. It's like, that's really, really annoying. Mm-hmm. I think if they make the information relay between the game and the actual PSN more accurate, that'll kind of alleviate a lot of the frustration it can be trying to get a game, because I don't know why I felt as though this generation it's been difficult playing with friends, because if you especially in the EA games like Battlefront 2 and Battlefield to a degree, trying to join friends can be a bit of a struggle sometimes.
Right.
So I'm glad that they're making it so that the PlayStation has more accurate information to deal with those requests.
Yeah, I wonder what sort of like what that information would be in terms, because like so many times like I'm playing back through a chunk of Modern Warfare and prepping for the reboot, and like so many times you go to join a game and it puts you in something where you're already 20 points down, or you're trying to sort of like, you know, you join something in progress. And if we can alleviate that altogether, like I'd rather just know what the overall
matchmaking feature where it's just don't put me in a game in
progress. Yeah. Let me tick that box. I will do it in everything.
Please, Scott. I think this is kind of essentially a feature for Ben Roy, so he can keep track of all of our games and what we're playing.
The overseer.
Bless the man.
For me, this kind of links into the PlayStation Assistant, with which Mark Cerny refused.
He dodged that. He was like, we're not talking about patents.
But the idea of sort of like the game and the console itself taking all this information of the types of titles you're playing, the types of people you're playing with, the types of matches that you're interested in, and giving you the relevant information, it all kind of points to towards a future that we're heading in. And I do like the idea of a PlayStation Assistant. I must admit, I've gone on about it in every single
video
recently.
You want to fall in love
with
your PlayStation?
I want to fall in love. Listen, right? I've tried. Alexa isn't for me. The Google Assistant is too robotic.
Cortana's too nostalgic.
Cortana's too nostalgic.
Too
many ties to a different game series. Mm-hmm. I just need a fresh slate where I can fall in love with my PlayStation
Assistant.
To quickly
outline what the PlayStation Assistant is, a patent has got filed by Sony as to a controllable sort of assistant that would scan, basically be aware of the game that you're playing and where you are maybe stuck, and you would call out into the heavens and say, oh dear Lord, save me, and then it would sort of well, we know that you're on level 5-2 of whatever, this is what you're supposed to do, here's the YouTube clip, don't worry about it, this is what you're supposed to do, and assumedly it's very 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 similar
I
to what Google Stadia is doing.
I want my PlayStation Assistant to yell at me whenever I do that. It's like, here you are, you pathetic worm.
The voice of Tommy Lee Jones
can't get
in.
Past this.
Come on, boy.
Wait, hey, there's no kink shaming here,
but I guess that's the thing though, like it seems like, for me, it reads like what they're experimenting with in terms of what Google Stadia are going for, because Google had this whole thing as part of their presentation that Google Stadia is very much aware of like the game state itself. It somehow reads the game, and it's not just a data stream. It reads it in some way that it knows what you're playing, kind of thing. And if you get stuck, then you hit the button, you can ask for help, and it matches that with all the algorithmic stuff that YouTube already has to say, like, well, it's this level, this is what you need to do. And I think the reason that Sony sort of dodged it is because I don't know if they know that that's what they want to do yet.
Yeah.
The patent's obviously been filed, but I think they'll see how Stadia goes, and if people actually want a feature that's that sort of potentially invasive.
Presuming this will mean that the whole application suspended closing application thing will be getting a little bit of a revamp as well, because it can be quite annoying. Say if I a funny thing happens to me in Red Dead Redemption the other day when I hit my head, hit my noggin on the bridge
in very the game, funny, not in real
very,
life.
Very funny. I had to record the clip, and then I had to go into the capture gallery and then obviously edit it down. But then when I edited it down, it took me out of the session because it's like, hey, you little rapscallion, you've suspended this application. Get the hell out of here. Uh-huh. And that's quite annoying. So I would like it if you're using stuff like the capture gallery or trying to use another app in conjunction with something that you're playing. If that didn't mean suspending different applications.
There's also, just in terms of the recording software, it's always meant to be that there's on the PS4, it's always recording the last, like, I think half 15 hour.
15 minutes.
Yeah. 15. Of what you were doing. And if you hold the button to sort of bank that 15 minutes, then it's meant to keep recording from when you banked it, keep going forward. Because if something else awesome happens, then you should be able to hit the button and get it back again. Mm. But I've just had things in the past, different sort of mess ups where it's overwritten the old file.
I've had things where it's like if you've hit it and then it doesn't do it and you're like, it's frozen or whatever. And you're like, crap. So then you press circle to back out, and then you hit share again. It's recorded.
It loses
the last 15 minutes, and then it goes to the last 30 seconds. Yep. And it's like, what?
Yeah, I've had that. I think because it always overrides it. Yeah.
Now you mention it, I've just realized that I've been cheating the system for my entire life.
You've been
so
doing
far,
the double tap.
Because I tap it to hold down to save the video or whatever. And then when it comes to like share video file, I always click that and then back out, and that banks it for sure.
Right, which is
obviously not how it's supposed to work. I was looking at you guys there, like, mine always works properly. And then I've realized I've been using an elaborate workaround.
I guess that works. I mean, when I record footage for, if we do like a game review or something, I don't do the upload thing. I just hit the button and press square and just bank the last 15 minutes as is, and I'll edit it later. But the way that they sort of have that, like the assumption that you can just upload something faster, the thing that you try to do with your clip, that should work way smoother than it does, and has potential for it to go backwards. It's weird with this because at the start of the generation, one of the biggest new things was like, oh, we're going to have this dedicated button for social sharing, and we're going to, you know, bring in, you can stream straight from your console and you can use
it. By Facebook.
Yeah, exactly. And then now they've sort of lost the Facebook integration. But it's weird. I thought that at the time, in back in 2012, 2013, I didn't think that was a big enough step up. And they've talked a little bit, not in this interview, but they've talked a little bit about the PS5 being more streamer friendly and getting you online and whatever. But where do you think like that stuff belongs in a console experience? Like, are you expecting those features?
I mean, not me personally, but that's such a big part of the gaming landscape now that I think they've got to accommodate that. It's such a big sort of space. People don't only love to stream, they love to watch streams as well. And I think if you're not accommodating for that, you're just kind of shooting yourself in the foot in a way.
I occasionally did an occasional stream when I was playing Overwatch or Batman Arkham. Like, it was never a case of, like, I don't have an established base on Twitch, I don't use it for any serious thing. It was just occasionally like, maybe this will be fun to share with people, with the world. So if they can make it more casual, then maybe I think the people who are more, you know, sustained to doing Twitch as an actual profession will have their own things,
have full rigs and setups,
you know. Whereas if you just want to actually just be like, okay, I'm the new Batman game's come out, I'm really excited to share this with you all, come watch me play the game or whatever, I think that's like a sweet idea. Maybe
I'm totally with you on that, actually. You and I think it's a great sort of accessible first step to kind of help anyone who might be interested in making those sorts of experiences or sharing those sorts of experiences. I remember when the share feature was first announced for PlayStation 4, I thought that was so cool because I had always wanted to do that with the Xbox 360, not even to like go on YouTube or whatever, just to sort of have it and like edit it together. And I never could because I could never afford like capture cards or whatever. But then I remember making my first ever YouTube video from clips that I recorded from Destiny 1. And it was crap and terrible. But the idea that I had those tools at my disposal and then I just tried it because it was there, I think that's quite
I think it's awesome for what it is. Yeah. My whole thing was just that I didn't feel like it was the necessary step up for console hardware. Whereas the stuff that they're leading with this makes sense in terms of applying to all games and applying to all developers and how they think of new ideas. I actually love the way that the Switch does this stuff where you just hit the button. The Switch is way less, it doesn't do it 15 minutes. It's something like you hit the button then it captures the last like 10 seconds or something. You can do that whenever you want. You can also turn it straight into a GIF and upload that, which like I think is really, really handy. In terms of just streamlining the
process,
that'd
be handy because at the moment it's pictures and videos. GIFs would be a great thing to share.
Totally,
if you want to do that. I can't think of anything else off the top of my head, but I think that would be a great thing to have.
It ties in with the UI overhaul thing. Like if I boot my PS5 up like immediately and like some new games out, and I see one of you guys just streaming like right there on the UI, and I can just tap it and blow it up and keep going. Then that stuff kind of works, especially compared to what the Google Stadia is going for in terms of everything being streamable and whatever.
Yeah. I'm going to tell you this right now, Scott. So many times something has happened to me in a game. I recall it was Sekiro when we were both playing that, and I got the clip and I wanted to share it immediately to you, but I thought, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to jump through all these hoops to cut it down and then put it on Twitter then send it to Scott privately. I just wanted to send it straight to you and I couldn't do it. So if the PlayStation 5 allows me to do that office-wide, that would be
actually
awesome.
It's an office application or just being able to the thing is, if I want to share a bunch of screenshots online, I have to put them through Facebook or Twitter, only Twitter now,
and they degrade the quality of
It's like the only other way around that is to get a USB stick, put it in, copy them across, bring the USB stick in, whatever. Like, they're obviously 1% problems or whatever, but if you have the you have the ability to just take awesome screenshots and videos, then let me put them on some server or put them somewhere else. Let me email them to myself.
PlayStation could totally do their own photo sharing service for their own games. That makes perfect sense. If they want to lean into the social applications of the console, they should just make a photo, like, you know, screenshot photo mode bank or whatever, where people should, and then they can do things. They can run like prizes, like the best photo mode pictures we've seen this week or whatever,
They do that on the, well, some of the developers do that, where like the
Insomniac did it all the time for Spider-Man.
Naughty Dog have just done it for The Last of Us, but it's like, encourage that stuff more. Give us a way to get those like awesome screenshots up and out there and like make the medium more visual or whatever. Like anything that celebrates the craft of video games, I'm all for. But yeah, so that's the sort of like all the stuff that came out of the Wired write-up as of whatever date it is right now.
I don't know. The 4th, 5th, Ewan? 6th, 7th, 8th. I think it's the 8th.
I'm not checking my phone.
I'm going to go with
it's the 8th of October.
Yeah.
2019.
Josh is correct.
Yes. It's fine.
He's correct.
Good. So yeah, that's the latest stuff. We'll probably not know that much until next year, but we'll see. There's still meant to be the PlayStation Experience that's coming next month, I believe. December?
I don't think it's happening this year, actually.
Oh yeah?
I thought they said it wasn't going down.
VGAs.
Who knows? The VGAs, maybe.
We will see. I just sort of wrote down a variety of things to sort of end this on, saying that maybe we'll see more for the rest of this year.
Maybe it'll be next year. Maybe.
You never know. But either way, this is the latest up to date information on the PS5. And for now, this has been the What Culture Gaming Podcast. And I've been your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Josh Brown.
Goodbye.
And Ewan Patterson.
Bye.
I'll catch you next time.
See ya.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.